everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually Tech, episode 8 for the 31st of March 2010. And I am David McVeigh, hosting us again, and I'm very proud to announce that we actually made the new and noteworthy section of the iTunes Store this week.
Yeah,
and I even have a visual cue for those who are watching in the chat room.
So what would technology? Technology.
In technology. In the technology section. Now, if you look through the technology front screen here, note all of Leo Laporte's shows are the entire front page. So I say woohoo to us, and all we really need now is more people to put reviews in, and we're going to get up there on those ranks. It's fantastic news. I am joined this week, as always, by the wonderful Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Awesome, dude. I'm basically starting that every show. It's too cliche now. I've got to come up with something different for next
week's show. It's only cliche because it's true.
Yeah, well, no. Things are great. Works fine. No, actually, you know, it's not all fine. My foot's still messed up.
And are you wearing your compression bandage?
I am wearing my compression bandage.
Now, for those who don't know, when we had the unofficial Geek Actually Movie Club last week, which is, we'll come to that at the end, Josh had to run out of the cinema to relieve himself, and on his way back, tripped up the stairs.
No. Other way around. I was going down the stairs and missed two stairs, landed on the side of my ankle, and then lay in the middle of an empty cinema floor for about a minute and a half going, ow. and then slowly stumbled back up the stairs. And
you've been limping ever since.
So. Yeah, so it's been great, man. That's,
and my lovely sister Sarah bought him a compression bandage. Are you wearing it?
I am.
Oh, yes,
might,
yes.
You really
no,
want
no,
to
we
just,
don't really want to see that. Yeah. Hey, there it is. All right.
There we go.
And Shane Gregory, how are you this evening?
Very good. It's very good to be back on here after missing last week because I got stuck in a meeting.
I know, that really sucked. But
it's okay. Nice when they drop those things on you without actually telling you about them, isn't it, Shane?
Yeah, not telling me how long it would be to begin with.
But that's okay. We managed to futz our way through anyway, but it's really wonderful to have you back. All right, so now that we've gone through the first, what is that, the first 2.5 minutes of people listening to us for the first time because we've been on the new news and new and noteworthy section going, what the hell am I listening to? All right, so this is Geek Actually
Suckers.
Tech. This is our weekly tech component of the Geek Actually Podcast Network. Basically, for the next hour or so, we sit back and just chew the fat over technology.
Mm-hmm.
We have no real fixed agenda. Sometimes we have a fixed topic. Sometimes we don't, as we don't today. Today, we're just going to kind of distill the week's worth of news into an hour and see if we can actually make some sort of sense out of it. One of our primary focuses here, of course, though, is to try and make tech a little bit more accessible for the person, for the people who aren't necessarily tech savvy. Sometimes we go a little bit technical, but we try and keep it as understandable as possible. And we actually do have a feedback, which we'll read later on, one of iTunes review, actually, which is very nice and kind of sums that up as well. So we'll come back to that. If you're wondering, if you are just coming to the audio podcast and you're wondering what we're talking about, his compression bandages and blah, 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 we do go out live on this show, and typically we record every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Today we're actually relatively on time. It's 8:09.
Yeah,
I'm stunned.
Pretty close.
I'm stunned. But we're always here on time. It's just we don't always start on time. That's the trick. Anyway, so if you want to come along and watch, you can come to geekactually.com/live, and you can watch this madness. All right, so we do start off the show every week with a little bit of previously in the last episodes, and I do have one quick follow-up, and it's actually not on your show notes because I only found out about it today, which was 5 p.m. Tuesday local time. Now, before I start that, I've kind of buried the lead here. Before I do that, let me start by saying we have been covering for the last couple of weeks the whole Google China move, and the fact that last week we actually talked about the fact that Google closed down Google CN, basically made it forward to Google HK, and in Hong Kong they're not censored, and that way they could actually free flow their search engine stuff without being censored. Now, of course, China immediately put up the Great Firewall of China, and anything that was searched for that was objectionable, they blocked, but otherwise searches went through. Well, here's the update. 5 p.m. Tuesday local time China, Google was 100% filtered in China. Basically, China has said, nah, enough's enough, and they just basically locked down, and Google HK is blocked by the Chinese Great Firewall. Basically, their argument to this was when people would do a search and see things like Tiananmen Square and stuff like that, and then click on it and say your selection has been blocked, it makes people suspicious. So it's easier just to block the whole thing. Mm. So Google is now officially blocked in China. So that's the update on what has been going on that side of the world. We kind of, I think the writing was on the wall, don't you think, guys?
Yeah, I think
I'm not actually surprised. This is
the tanty that, you know, like we've been expecting from China this entire time. Like
pretty much,
it was eventually going to come out, and they were eventually just going to put up everything and just say, nah, that's it. And that's what they've pretty much done here. And I have to say that this is exactly what I would expect from China, but it also continues to help my brilliant antiness towards any sort of censorship on the internet, because it just proves that the people in control are just as childish as, well, you know, the people that are being blocked for, well, not so much the pornography or anything like that, but everything else.
Well, and in this particular case, they're blocking mostly political stuff. It's not even about pornography.
Exactly.
Which kind of brings us to our own filter, which we'll come to in just a minute. Shane, what do you think of this? Were you expecting this move?
I was. This is a Chinese firewall, however. Maybe it could be a nuclear firewall.
Oh, no.
let's not incite riot at this point.
We at Geek actually here do not condone explosions of do any not kind condone that aren't
first strike actions. Oh, dear. All right, well, let's bring this home then, because we have our own firewall issues that need to be dealt with. And I just want to look. There's part of me that says I want to apologize up front for harping on this a lot, but at the second time I'm going to say this without apology, because this is a damn important issue and it keeps coming up. And until this is finalized and put to bed, it's something that needs to be mentioned over and over and over again, because it is on the table. The government is planning this right now. It is happening. Mm. This is politics in the making. We are actually about to see this happen. Things move very, very quickly once they decide to ratify something into law. Mm. And so all it takes is everybody to agree in the House, and suddenly we are firewalled. And there's just no way around that. So I think we need to always keep coming back to this until Stephen Conroy resigns. Or no, I didn't say
Or somebody gets him to resign. I would like whoever was in charge of getting Michael Atkinson out. Come on, mate. We need your help again.
Now, I'm going to put up a picture on the screen for our chat room. Now, unfortunately, the audio listeners aren't going to see this. I'm going to try. I'll see if I can remember to actually include this in the post when this episode goes up, because I love this photo. This is the best photo of Stephen Conroy I've ever seen. It just feels like...
I will rule you all with an iron fist.
He looks like a villain from a Bond movie.
He really does. He looks like Sam Rockwell's character in Iron Man 2. That's what I'm getting from him right now. I think he's going to be that kind of an evil.
Yes. Yeah. Look at it. Look at the eyebrow action going in the whole bit. Anyway, this is gripping listening for the audio listeners, I'm sure. All right, let's talk about the latest in this, because Stephen Conroy was actually on ABC Radio this week. Now, where do you start with this? Because I guess we start with the Americans. All right, let's start with the Americans. Hillary Clinton gave a speech, right? We all know that Hillary Clinton
gave
a speech.
God bless that woman.
God bless her. She was fabulous. I actually have a copy of the speech right here. It is 14 pages long, and we're not going to bother you all with all of it. But I will say that you can actually watch it as well. The video of the speech is up online. U.S. Department of State is actually where you can find it. I just wanted to read a quick passage from the scads and scads of paper here, and I'm sure this isn't even the best one, but excuse my frog in my throat here. she says, to quote Hillary Clinton, "In the last year, we've seen a spike in threats to the free flow of information. China, Tunisia, and Uzbekistan have stepped up their censorship of the internet. In Vietnam, access to popular social networking sites has suddenly disappeared. And last Friday in Egypt, 30 bloggers and activists were detained." She goes on for a bit, and then she says, "So while it is clear that the spread of these technologies is transforming our world, it is still unclear how that transformation will affect the human rights and the human welfare of the world's population." Now, here's my favorite passage, and this is a bit of flag waving, and it is very American-esque, but all I can say is the ideals are right, and that's what I love about it, is the fact she says, "On their own, new technologies do not take sides in the struggle for freedom and progress, but the United States does. We stand for a single internet where all humanity has equal access to knowledge and ideas, and we recognize that the world's information infrastructure will become what we and others make of it. Now this challenge may be new, but our responsibility to help ensure the free exchange of ideas goes back to the birth of our republic. The words of the First Amendment to our Constitution are carved in 50 tons of Tennessee marble on the front of this building.
Wow.
And every generation of Americans has worked to protect the values etched in that stone. And I just think...
Speak!
You go, girl! You go, girl! Because I sit there and I listen to those words, and all I hear, basically, reading between the lines, is she's having a jab at all those people who are censoring. Stephen Conroy, are you listening? Mm. Basically saying, stop screwing with it.
Mm.
You know, this is a free flow of ideas, and no one government, and she's basically saying, no one government owns this.
Well, I think, to me, it goes further than that, because all I can think every time this discussion comes up, every time the concept of an unlisted blacklist, it's something that we can't see and all this sort of stuff, is we are just going backwards. This is the Information Act all over again. I mean, this in a way, and I'm not meaning to be controversial when I say this, but this is no better
than McCarthyism. Absolutely.
No, dude, this is no better than when Hitler burned books.
Absolutely. Like, way back.
Exactly. This is the exact same thing. This is the situation where information is being culled by people that are just making decisions for us. And it's one of those things that is just like, who gives you that right? Mm. And where did you suddenly get the ability to affect everyone in the country for what you say is the good of the people? We're not even being asked about this.
No. Well, we are, kind of. They have discussion papers. And the funny thing is, the discussion paper for this particular internet censorship policy came and went so fast, the closing date was so quick, that we really didn't see much about the
discussion. Well, and there was no information put out to the people as to what was going on. Yeah. Us free media were the only people that were actually putting it out there.
And let's not forget, this is the part that pisses me off the most. And I harp on religion a lot, I'm sorry. But the part that pisses me off the most is the fact that Stephen Conroy is on record as saying, we went to the election with this policy. We did actually say when we were going to the election that we were backing this internet censorship filter. Do a little bit of research. What you actually find out is he only ever mentioned it once during the campaign at a church rally.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't even out to the public. It was to a church rally.
Yeah.
And he sit there and go, that's not a mandate.
No.
You know, that's not even a promise. That's an open comment that you threw out in a church. Just really,
are those people acceptably unbiased?
And is he not just telling them what they want to hear? You know, it's like, it's ridiculous. Anyway, moving on from Hillary's speech, where this comes home to us is that basically we've got the U.S. is now questioning Kevin Rudd and Stephen Conroy's internet censorship filter. In an article dated the 29th of March this week, a quote came out that said, the Obama administration wants to encourage an open internet to enhance global economic growth, and security is mounting a diplomatic assault on threats to the open web around the world. U.S. State Department spokesperson Noel Clay said, quote unquote, the U.S. and Australia are close partners on issues related to cyber matters generally, including national security and economic issues. We do not discuss the details of specific diplomatic exchanges, but can say that in the context of that ongoing relationship, we have raised concerns on this matter with the Australian officials.
Yeah, now whether or not they'll take it to heart, that's another question entirely.
Well, the part that really got me about this entire, I think it's the last quote I have from that, the thing that really got me was I actually have Stephen Conroy's response to that. Would you like to hear it?
Oh, yes. Oh, please.
This is just a quick soundbite. The actual interview...
Wait, it's a video, is it?
No, it's audio only.
Okay, cool. Well, while you're playing it, can you just have that awesome picture of
him? Would you like that
one,
or would you like this one?
No, that one's actually quite scary.
It's kind of disturbing, isn't it? Here he is. He wants to rule the world. Now, this is the part that really kind of steamed me. This entire thing, you can find it on the ABC Radio site. I will put a link up to it on the show notes. I do suggest you go and have a listen to the entire interview, because I found it incredibly infuriating, because none of the questions I want answered got asked. Or got asked and weren't answered, which was the other frustrating part. You know, this is what Stephen Conroy had to say about that particular issue, though, which was that they have been in touch and expressing their concerns. So let's have a listen.
I'll come first of all to reports that are running on the news today that the Obama administration has concerns over your plans to censor the internet, that the State Department in the US has raised those concerns with you. What are the nature of these concerns?
Well, I've seen those reports. I haven't had any direct contact
from
the US State Department. They may have raised them with other government agencies, but I...
Have you ever used a computer?
...with them at all. I think that if you read Senator Hillary Clinton's speech, which was a very good speech that she gave...
You obviously weren't listening.
She stated in January on a speech on internet freedom that all societies recognise that free expression has its limits.
Yeah, and then the bit that followed up with that, which was, oh my God.
I just love the fact he goes, yeah, I've seen those reports, but nobody's been in touch with me. Yeah. Hang on. You've seen the reports, but nobody's been in touch with you about
it. It's a double negative.
Yeah, there's something seriously wrong with that concept. So that was Mr. Conroy basically backpedaling like crazy. He actually backpedaled on a couple of things this week. The other thing that he backpedaled on was the blacklist, and he actually does talk about the blacklist in this interview. I don't have the sound clip, but I'll surmise for you. Basically, the part that kind of frustrated me was when they were saying that, you know, this could be limiting your freedoms and blah, 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 all the other things that people always say. He came up with this particular statistic. He said there are 338 known sites that are on the blacklist that are abhorrent, his word, abhorrent material, to the point where he actually went on to say that he wanted to show the other ministers some of these sites. And the Australian Federal Police told him not to because they were so awful that they might actually deeply affect the other ministers. So basically what he's saying is there's 338 sites out there that will make your brain melt and your head explode. It's like Videodrome.
Wonderful, but can we just add that there are a lot more than 330 things on that list?
And that's the point that was never addressed, is that we know... because he has said it in previous statements, that there are 1,440 websites included on the blacklist. As of last year, there's probably more now, 1,440 sites. So 338 sites that are, you know, this child pornography, horror, bestiality, make your head explode stuff. What's the rest of it? And that's the question that I want answered. What is the rest of it? You know, and he's saying that the filter will work, and he said that in the trials, the filter had 100% accuracy in blocking it because he said it's not a heuristic blocker. Basically, it is blocking specific websites, right? It's only blocking what is on the blacklist, right? So he's saying that it's 100% effective in blocking exactly what's on the blacklist. I have an issue with that, which we'll come back to in a second. Remind me. I have a quote for that. All right. What do you think? What are your thoughts on this?
Are you able to put up that other picture that you had up before?
Which one? The one where he looks like he's giving a blowjob?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
One thing I say about that.
He's saying my lie is this big.
It's about to say I'm going to huff and puff and blow your house down.
he's such an odd man, and I find. Like, I mean, there's a certain level of politics that you expect out of a politician, right? You expect a certain amount, minimum amount of disillusion and misdirection. You expect these kind of things. But the problem that I have with Conroy is all it is misdirection. There's never any questions answered. Like, I mean, the more videos and the more audio that I actually listen to of this guy, the man is... an absolutely amazing politician.
He talks in circles.
Because he has not answered a question, and I think in his entire career. It's
No, he's masterful at it, I tell you what. The reason why I said we'll come back to the blacklist is because one of the things that I will say about Conroy this week is that he actually did backtrack a little bit on himself. Because if you remember, Josh, going back to Geek Actually, when we started covering this a while ago... he actually said that they couldn't make the blacklist transparent and it was going to be a secret list and blah, 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 and all this nonsense that went around it. Well, that is actually one of the biggest things of contention, is the fact that there's no recourse on any of this. There's no transparency on any of this. Mm. Well, he has actually now said that they've had a discussion paper out. Once again, one of these mythical discussion papers that
these wonderful ones that no one actually gets to see.
We have a discussion paper that we've issued called for increased transparency measures. And he actually says that he said making the list public. Now, this is the part that I love. All right, bear with me on this for a second. He says, Senator Conroy said making the list public would undermine what the internet filter policy was designed to achieve. I quote, "The problem when you produce a list of URLs is that you're actually giving the address to where to go and look. You're actually giving them an address."
Sorry.
What? Yeah, I think you're about to address exactly the point I'm about to say. Go for it.
If the internet filter's in place...
Aren't they blocked?
Yeah. So why would this be a problem? And also, who says we need to know? We just need... Like, what I want is a select group of differently opposed factions to have access to this. I want political parties, right, that are in office to have complete access to this list. I want the liberals, I want the tree-smoking hippies, I want everyone, so that people can actually be objective about this. If we just give it to the information technology people, you've just got Conroy sitting at his desk going, "Didn't like that site, don't like
that." Well,
he's
actually saying, one of the things he's actually said in this radio show was that they're actually thinking about putting it out to independent sources. So it wouldn't actually be government run. It would be independently sourced. And so it would be a commission, basically, set up
to
run it.
Yeah, so what, the Australian Christian Foundation?
Well, no, hopefully you would set it up a little bit like the OFLC, which is actually a body of elected people, basically, who come in, and they're all different from different walks of life, and they're all, you know, and because we know how well that works.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of where I was going with that, but I was going to stay quiet on that one.
Anyway, I like the fact that Untrum has actually said in our chat room, "Some sites have sick, crazy deaths, like people getting their heads chopped off, which is fucked up." And I agree. And these sites are the sites that they probably want to block. And that's fine. My argument to this, and I don't understand why this is so hard. Why don't they make it so that under the Freedom of Information, under the Freedom of Information Act in Australia, we can find out if our site is blocked, right? Mm. We don't necessarily have to see the whole list. We don't necessarily have to have access to the whole list. But let's say one day something's not working right, we should be able to submit to them and say, "We want to know if our site is blocked." If the site if they return back, like you're getting a credit report, if it comes back that your site is blocked, you should then be able to put in an appeal to be able to get it unblocked, just like you can appeal, you know, a film that is banned, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why this is so hard. Why is it that we're making this so hard? Because, you know, if your site is blocked, you should have the right to know that your site has been blocked, you know? I don't understand why it isn't transparent. I have no problem. In fact, these words are like vinegar coming out of my mouth, to quote Sandra Bullock. I don't actually have a problem with the internet censorship filter. If it is handled like the way they say it's going to be handled. A select group of websites are blocked because they contain material that is illegal in Australia, right? I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
What I have a problem with is no recourse. I have a problem with arbitrary banning of sites because they may go against your political or religious belief. I have a problem with the banning of sites. I have a problem with just willy-nilly throwing sites onto a ban list that could, you know, slow down the internet and everything else. Theoretically, it would not slow the internet down if it is only blocking a select group of URLs because it's not searching for anything.
Well, like, the other thing that I don't quite get is he's so hit up with this concept of creating an internet censorship filter. We have, information task forces in every country of the world. Why are we not putting this money, instead of creating some sort of a crazy blacklist which we have no access to, why don't you just give that money to this department so that they can go to the places where these sites are done and remove them?
Yeah, well, he actually did say in the ABC report that the $40 billion or whatever it is for this whole program is actually only a small part of that is the... blacklist. Only a small part of this is the filter. They also put on more federal police. They set up task force. I mean, the budget actually was about an overall package of stuff. So people who sit there and go, "It cost $43 billion or whatever it is for the..." No, it didn't. The filter itself actually wasn't as expensive as the full budget. There is a lot of other factors involved. And those are the factors I agree with. Put more cops on. Stop the bastards who are doing this horrible shit to children and stuff like that. Fine. You know, but don't block sites about legal injecting rooms and graffiti art.
I mean, perhaps they should just give the money to Google, and Google can go find all the sites for them.
It's Funny you mentioned Google. All right. I happen to have a story. That nice segue there. I happen to have a story here, which basically he also attacked Google. Stephen Conroy also attacked Google in this radio show. And the reason he attacked Google is, of course, as we reported last week, Google took a shot at the internet censorship filter. He said in this radio show, quote, recently the founders of Google have got themselves into a little bit of trouble because, can I do a Conroy voice? I don't think I can.
No, I don't think. you don't have enough contempt for human information.
They got themselves in a little bit of trouble because notwithstanding their alleged do no evil policy, they recently created something called Buzz. And there was a reaction and people said, well, look, aren't you publishing private information? Conroy, month and a half ago, they apologized, and it's been fixed, you know? And that's the difference, is there's transparency.
And it was fixed in how long?
It was fixed within a week, you know? It's like, God, over, you know, really, you are behind the times. He then went on to say that Google CEO Eric Schmidt said the following. Quote, Google's Eric Schmidt. So this is a quote within a quote, so that's interesting. If you have something that you don't want anyone to know, maybe you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. This is the founder of Google. He also said recently to Wall Street analysts, we love cash. Of course they do. They're a private company, and they're talking to Wall Street.
And for the record, who here doesn't like cash?
No, that's right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
greed is good, man.
Greed is good. No, but look, Google is a private company. They're talking to Wall Street. They make a lot of money. Of course he's going to say they like cash when talking to Wall Street analysts. That's not actually doing evil. Saying you like cash is not doing evil. All right, anyway, the whole Google do no evil thing I have issues with, but this is not what it's about. He went on to say, when people say, shouldn't we just leave it up to Google, to the Googles of this world to determine what the filtering policy should be? And he left it with a dramatic pause, ... It's like, oh, get over yourself. Get over yourself. Google actually responded to that very quickly, said this is a debate about freedom of access to information for all Australians, an issue of national importance. Let's focus on that, shall we? It's just like saying, stuff you. All right. I think that's it for Stephen Conroy. I think we can have a bit more fun.
I think we've beat that.
And we should have played the girl from Ipanema throughout the back of all of that. I'm sorry, mildly obsessed. All right. What would you say, boys, if I told you that the iPhone was hacked not once, but twice this week?
I would say it had to happen eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that clever hackers, what can I tell you? First time it was hacked was actually the iPhone proper. The second time was an app. The first time, for those who don't know, there is a competition called Pwned to Own. Basically, if you can pwn the device, you get to own it, and you also get a cash prize. Previous things that have been pwned, basically the MacBook Air was pwned within its first couple of weeks, and the person got to take one home. This year, some security researchers basically developed an undisclosed attack. Now, the reason why it's undisclosed at this point, for those who don't understand how this works, basically they don't make public the hack until they've given the person who created the product, so in this case Apple, a chance to fix the hole. If they don't fix it within a certain period of time, then they publish their results and stuff everybody else. This is exactly the same way all security analysts work. They find a flaw, they report it to the people, and then if it's not fixed within a certain period of time, that's when they release it out and basically say, you were given a chance. Mm. All right, so they had an undisclosed attack on the iPhone's mobile Safari browser, got access to the phone, and then ran a program that sent the phone's SMS messages to a web server. And they basically managed to secure all the SMS messages on a private iPhone, which is awesome, quite frankly.
That's difficult to achieve.
It's a hell of a hack. I think it's fantastic. All right, so that was number one. The reason why that sent shockwaves and the reason why it was so important was the fact that the iPhone attack, this is basically the first time since the version 2 software was released. We're up to version 3 now. So the first time since version 2 that the iPhone has managed to get hacked. And at last year's Pwned to Own competition, nobody could hack it. So this year, somebody got through. So there is a new iPhone OS about to come out, though, so it's probably going to change the rules anyway. So
I've got a question. Isn't jailbreaking your phone hacking it?
It is, but with jailbreaking, it's not actually – you're not maliciously trying to get into somebody's account. You're doing it to your own phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That for me is the big thing. I mean, hacking is the concept of you doing something to someone else, in my opinion. I mean, you can hack your own phone, but
– And then you could do it for somebody else too.
With jailbreaking, though, basically what you're doing is you're – applying patches that unlock the phone. Mm-hmm. Now, those unlocks already exist in the phone. They're just locked by Apple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's actually people
this
who sell.
This is forcing your way in.
Yeah, this is while somebody is carrying their phone, you manage to extract information off their phone without them knowing that you've extracted the information off their phone. Also, jailbreaking, you're not actually stealing information. You're just opening, you're unlocking the phone. Yeah. This is stealing information off of a phone. Mm. So the second one, however, I thought was actually the more fun of the two. this was actually this week, March 30th, this was reported. There was an app for the iPhone called Quip, Q-U-I-P. Mm. Now, the Quip app, God, say that five times fast. Quip app. The Quip app promised to let people to send pictures to each other for free, like MMS messaging, but it would be free by uploading the photos to a server and then downloading them to somebody else's phone. Well, it turns out that the server that they were uploading them to was a publicly accessible web server and had no encryption. Mm. And some industrious people managed to get hold of all the photos that were in there. And it says here in this article on news.com.au that some internet users also allegedly were able to match up nude photos with real names and Facebook profiles. Managed to actually match them up and find them. And it's like, ooh, that's not good. So that's not actually the iPhone itself being hacked, but the Quip app. But it is on the iPhone, so it counts. Mm. And Quip has actually issued this statement where they said, as soon as this post came to our attention, we immediately shut down our servers. We have also now disabled all S3 access and have started to systematically secure all files in the system. We will not bring the system back up until we have adequate security around all files shared over the Quip. All I can think is, couldn't you have thought of that earlier? yeah. Okay, good. All right, so we're all iPhone users here.
Yeah.
Have you ever worried about your iPhone being hacked?
No.
No. Look, the easiest way, quite frankly, to hack into somebody's iPhone, and this goes for all phones and actually all laptops, and this is for the viewers and listeners out there, if you have Bluetooth on your device and you have discoverable on your device, you have a vulnerability. All right. And basically it's really easy to tap into a discoverable Bluetooth server. Now this is your laptop, your phone, whatever. It doesn't matter. Mm. Once you have made any pairing that you need to make paired, turn off discoverable. That locks your system up. But a lot of people don't. And I don't know how many times I've walked through major shopping centers and my Bluetooth on my phone is detecting phones all over the place, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, luckily I'm not the sort of person who's willing to go in there and have a look. But there are people who are. So just be aware. It's the same thing about encryption on your Wi-Fi. If you have an open Wi-Fi and you're sitting down in some internet cafe and you haven't bothered to lock anything off on your Wi-Fi, dude, you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just the way it is.
There is part of me that constantly thinks when I'm sitting at a cafe, it's like, maybe I should just go for a walk around that computer, but I always decide not to at the last minute. I'm like, look, someone more malicious will do it someday.
They don't need me.
They don't need me. The only other fun thing is if anybody ever wants a fun game to play on the trains, they call it Bluetooth tennis. If you find someone that does have a completely unlocked Bluetooth, just send them a photo. And I'm not talking about something disturbing or anything like that. Just send them a picture of a tennis ball or something like that. And just see if they send something back. It's actually a really good fun. At like 5 o'clock at night when you're on a train and you're going home and there's like 10,000 like open connections, just start sending some things out and see if anybody will play the game. Good fun.
That is good fun. It's kind of like the old days, if you remember Windows 98 days, even Windows XP to a degree, with the Windows Messenger service. Remember the built-in Messenger service? It was designed for over-network communication. And of course, everybody learned how to start sending viruses and all sorts of stuff over it. And basically, first rule of thumb was to immediately turn that service off. But a lot of network engineers didn't. And I remember at the college I was working at when I was teaching IT, how many times those little boxes would pop up on screen. And you sit there and go, would you stop? You know? It's like, what is wrong with you people? Anyway, all right, let's talk computer. Computer games. Not games as such, but consoles. First story is, of course, the PS3. Josh, you know a little bit about this one, don't you?
The PS3...
The firmware update, Linux, that's coming.
Yeah. Okay, the initial PS3s that came out, sort of the, well, right the way up, really, to the...
my one.
Yep, the 60 gigs.
So everything pre-slim, apparently.
Yeah, 60, yeah. 80, and the 40. All of those had the ability to install an OS on it. It doesn't work with things like Windows, but it will do, like, Unix-based things, like Linux, Red Hat... even Ubuntu, apparently. Mm. There's a bunch of them that'll work, and basically you can install it and use it for, you know, like realistic and good kind of situations. I mean, you can't use all of the technology in the machine, certain aspects of it, so you can't basically use it to play PC games or anything like that, but you can use it for things like file servicing and mm-hmm. stuff like this. Apparently some military...
Also, it was just really cool to do.
Well, yeah, and apparently some military companies were actually using it for, you know, like a very big, powerful hub to use for file transfers and stuff like
that. Makes
this.
Sense. Yeah.
I mean, like, all sorts of uses. The thing about it was that it was just kind of an added bonus.
And it was encouraged, too, though. I remember... Mm. So it was a selling point of these machines.
Yeah, exactly. And look... I mean, as an extent, it was, you know, it was used, and a lot of companies did. The thing that I think's interesting is what we were discussing last night on the Game Arena podcast, where the truth is that 90% of the people using it for these tasks aren't using it as a PS3 as well. Mm. So most of these people aren't going to care. They're just not going to update the PS3. Because, I mean, like, the firmware's never helped them anyway because they're not even using the PS3 system. So therefore, it just becomes a service that's always on to them. But I think I can kind of understand from Sony's side in some ways, because it's just the idea of just they don't want to have to continue to add support for it and functionality.
Yeah, they put the lame excuse that it's a security update. Mm. They're basically saying that the new firmware, which is going to be 3.21, mm-hmm. Which will push out this week, I believe it is, isn't it? Thursday, yeah, this week. Basically, it's going to eliminate the other OS option, and they're saying that it is so that it's a more secure system. However, I heard speculation today on, I think it was Buzz Out Loud, where they were basically saying, come on, let's face it, this is because Sony doesn't want to have to do two update patches. They really want to streamline it all down so everybody's on the same update patch, and they're done.
The one thing that I really want PlayStation to do is actually start giving us a full list of what they do with their updates. It's actually kind of annoying to get an update that runs through your system and have no idea what it's actually done.
I hate that. I hate it. Apple does that too, where it'll just come up saying bug fixes.
Yeah.
Which bug fixes? What exactly are you doing to my machine? And just on a side note,
and just
actually,
all of a sudden, five of your apps disappear.
Yeah, just on a side note to that, Apple is pushing through a massive update for Snow Leopard this week.
Yeah.
It's a rolling thing. I haven't actually been hit by it yet, but apparently some others have. It's huge. It's a couple of hundred megabytes. It's giant. And apparently it fixes something like 16 or 17 vulnerabilities in QuickTime 10 alone. Wow. So, it's a big one. So that more information on that as we know about it. So, all right. So you guys are both PlayStation owners. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys ever bothered to put another OS on your systems?
No. I, and I mean this in the lightest way possible. I know how to. I just don't like Linux.
That's fair enough. But apparently you can actually put other operating systems too. It's not just Linux.
Like,
I don't know. It says it's the other OS. Apparently you can do other things. I don't know what you could do with it, but...
Well, I can't quite figure out what you... I mean, like, Windows...
Apparently Linux was just the most popular option.
Well, I just can't imagine because I know that, like, certain aspects, like, apparently... The
and before
graphics
somebody
cards,
in the chat room says... The Android operating system, that is Linux.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand why you would try anything else. Like, a lot of other ones require certain features. Like, I mean, like, GUIs are one thing, but which graphics...
You could put DOS 6.2. Awesome.
I think we're done on this subject. Let's move on. This isn't even accessible tech. This is far too complicated.
All right, let's move to the... So we've been from the PlayStation side. Let's move to the Xbox side of things. On the Xbox side of things, we talked about this on platforms. Mm. On Monday night, we got some confirmation, finally. Now, you guys talked about this on The Gap last night.
Yeah.
But for those who don't listen to The Gap and only listen here, we'll bring it up. Due on April 6th. It is confirmed that the USB storage option is coming to the Xbox 360. Now, what this means is that you will be able to plug in an external USB storage device, whether it be a USB key or a USB hard drive, and use that as a drive on your Xbox. So instead of having to buy the overpriced ridiculously priced, in fact, hard drive from Microsoft themselves, you can plug in your own. Lovely. A few caveats to this. The first one is that, as the article on ZDNet actually says, the formatting is relatively quaint, which I love that phrase. But it's only between 1 and 16 gigabytes of storage is allowed. So if you have an older key that is less than 1 gigabyte, not going
to
work.
Can I just add, though, if you're dumb enough to try and use something smaller than a 1 gig card, what are you planning to put on it?
Think about somebody who's using a 512 memory thing that they put in those things. You know what I mean? They might be just using...
Yeah, no one uses those either.
Look, I'm trying, all right? I'm trying. Anyway, all right, so between 1 and 16 gigabytes and only a maximum of 2. Which means you can actually run 2 simultaneously. You can have up to 32 gigabytes of space, and that's it. Mm. The original story we talked about on platforms, we were actually saying you could tandem or you could partition a drive to have multiple 16 gigs. No, maximum 2.
No, what will happen? Microsoft will release their own 8 and 16 gigabyte flash hard drives, and then they'll be overpriced.
Yeah.
No, they'll release a 16-bit gigabyte USB key, Microsoft-branded key, so it's not actually big and bulky, but it'll be like a $700 USB key because it's got the Xbox logo on the side.
Oh, yeah, and don't forget, it'll have the Xbox logo, and underneath it'll have the genuine Microsoft product.
There you go, and the little hologram.
But the truth about that is that the obvious reason why they're only doing maximum 32 is so that people will continue to buy. They're about to be released 250 gig hard drives that you'll actually be able to purchase.
Now, I look at this and I go, no big deal. I have a 20 gig hard drive on my Xbox. For me, I'll just plug in I'll plug in a hard drive. I'll get an extra 32 gig out of this thing. I'll probably only bother getting up to another 16. It just gives me that little bit of added extra storage.
Mm.
Excuse me. But I look at that and I go, no problem. I've survived quite happily for 2 years with a 20 gig drive. Mm. I'm not about to go installing my games to the hard drive, which is where you take up a lot of space.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And when I finish with a demo, I delete it.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's not like I've got a lot of stuff stored on there. So it doesn't really bother me. But, you know, there are going
to
be those...
I mean, full game installs, man, would be good to have a bit of extra room for that.
The only problem I have with full game installs, I would love to do full game installs. The only problem I have is you still got to put the disc in.
Well, yeah, but dude, no, I'm sorry, man. Like, especially Unreal 3 Engine games, it's just the joy to not, like, load the game and just have blank walls for, like, 4 minutes as you walk around going, where am I?
Yeah.
And then it's like, and all of a sudden the walls appear and you're like, oh, right, I'm in a spaceship. And you can't figure that out because it's just one gray wall until it loads.
Yeah, yeah.
And things like that are so much nicer when you're running those without it. Both me and Shane will do installs for any major game we're going to be playing, usually online or very regularly.
I just feel like it should be more like Steam. Once you've installed the game, you shouldn't need the disc again.
Mm.
Yeah, but the whole problem with that is how would people not just return the game?
Old serial numbers again, perhaps? Register the game on the Microsoft network?
But then, again...
And then you kill your trade-in market.
Exactly. Yeah. No.
I have no problem with that. All right. Look, this one's kind of been covered by every tech show under the sun. I thought just for completion we should also cover this because it was just so damn funny. We know that Steve Jobs and Eric Schmidt, CEO of Google, have had a falling out.
This became a
shooting war, okay? Yeah. And they're still fighting. I mean, we got more about advertising coming up that basically says they're still at each other's throats. However, this week... I'm bringing up the photo here. You can find this photo on Gizmodo. There'll be a link to it. This is Steve Jobs and Eric Schmidt having a coffee in a coffee shop this week, just sitting there, chewing the fat, having a coffee, having a chat, and everybody's going, what the hell? Steve Jobs doesn't get photographed in public. All right? This is not a guy who doesn't plan every single move that he makes, right? Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be at war with this guy, as the case may be. What the hell is he doing sitting outside...
How far from an Apple store is he?
Maybe he
just got really desperate for a coffee, and it was that really awkward situation that you get into sometimes where you see somebody on the street that you don't really want to talk to, but you don't physically have any hate for this person, so you get stuck in that really awkward conversation style, and then you have to sit down and have a coffee with them, otherwise it would be rude. And maybe that's just what happened, dude.
Or...
I'm trying.
Or
To quote you?
It has been speculated that this was a photo opportunity. It has been speculated that they did this very quietly because they're kind of like trying to show that they're burying the hatchet, you know? They kind of went, let's go.
He stabs him in the eye.
That's right. let's go sit outside this coffee shop and hope somebody walks by with a camera phone, as is what happened, finally. Yeah. There's a couple of photos of them sitting out in front of this coffee shop. Now, what I thought was really funny about the story and where the humor really starts coming in is these photos are from Gizmodo. And Gizmodo immediately took the photos to a body language expert to see if they could decipher what was going on here. Now, two lines of dialogue or two sentences were overheard from this conversation. Yeah. One of them, though, is the most interesting one, which is basically Jobs said to Schmidt, "They're going to see it all eventually, so who cares how they get it?" Intriguing. and then he followed that up with, "Let's go discuss this somewhere more private." I'm sorry, it sounded like Brokeback Mountain now. But the point is that the body language expert, I thought was really funny, said that if you look at Steve Jobs almost always consistently crosses his legs the other way. And he's only actually been recorded crossing his legs this way once before, which was when he was talking to Bill Gates. So it's probably a sign that he doesn't really like Schmidt very much. And Schmidt's posture is actually a sign, according to this body language expert, that he is terrified of Steve Jobs. It's a submissive position with his shoulders slumped forward. And I just think that's really funny. Anyway, so the point is, why are they out there trying to get photo opportunities? And turns out what came out a little bit later is that the coffee shop that they're having coffee at is actually owned by an ex-Google chef who is now owning his own coffee shop. So it's like, it's not really neutral ground because Schmidt obviously chose the I don't know. There's something very fishy going on about
that. Well, you know what? He's probably picking that thing because he knows if he meets Jobs somewhere quietly, he will reach into his chest and remove his heart
or
while
take out
still
that,
beating.
That new liver that he's got.
No, dude, I'm telling you, man. He's got the new liver. He doesn't need another one of those. This
Schmidt's
one's
heart.
The heart. Okay?
The other thing which I noticed in that photo as well is it seems like Jobs actually dresses the same way all the time.
That was actually something else that was raised by Gizmodo, which is that Jobs doesn't normally dress like that.
Yeah.
Apparently, when he's around the Apple complex and stuff, he just wears t-shirts and, you know, what have you. That's like his uniform for his public persona, which says he wanted to be seen here. You know, this is
seriously though. Can I just add how ridiculous the level of detail is to this? I mean, like, yes, I agree he's a calculating man, but Jesus Christ, maybe the guy just wanted a coffee.
I think the reason why this has captured the public attention so much is the fact that this sort of paparazzi over analysis of all of this sort of stuff has always been for rock stars and movie stars, not the geek world. I think the geeks are sitting there going, "We got one too." It's like, look at us, we got a rock star.
I imagine it would have generated thousands of hits. So good for them.
Good for Gizmodo. I think that's very funny. All right, so what follows is the funniest part to all of this, though, which is here they are all being nice to each other, Schmidt and Jobs having coffee together, and then Apple comes out with an announcement that they're going to be releasing iAd.
What the... No, I don't like the sound of that, dude. What the hell is iAd?
A mobile advertising platform to be debuted April 7th. And basically, we know that they were planning on doing something like this anyway because they bought the advertising company Quattro about a year ago now, I believe it was, which they spent $275 million on buying this advertising company. The only reason they bought that one was because Google, they were bidding on another company called AdMob, and Google bought it out from under them. More infighting between Google and Apple. But both Google and Apple are trying to get mobile ad space. You know all those advertisements that are actually on iPhone apps and stuff like that? They want that ad space, right? They want that location-aware ad space to service ads out into the mobile space. Well, iAd is their mobile ad platform, and according to Jobs, this is Apple's next big thing. This is they're going to try and snatch a bunch of money off of advertising in the mobile space. And all I can think is, this is not burying the hatchet between Google and Apple, because this is treading right on Google's toes. This is Google's place, and Apple is really going to basically say,
could that be what they were talking about? You know, like he's saying, dude, I know what you're doing, and he's just going, look, they're going to find it out eventually. And,
maybe they were thrashing out this mobile ad space thing. Maybe Jobs was having...
Well, no, maybe it's like Jobs hates him, right? And the guy sitting in the other seat is terrified because he's basically about to lose like half of his advertising market. I'd be terrified if a man was doing that. I'd be like, you can't do that. That's mine.
Apple's going... All right, so okay, is that enough Schmidt and Jobs for one day?
Yeah,
I would like to point out that while we're on the topic of Steve Jobs, not in the show notes, but while we're on the topic, iPad is out this Saturday. Just let's be aware that it's about to be launched and be in the real world.
So that's Saturday in America.
Yeah, Saturday
so
in
that's
America.
Friday
our time, but we won't get it for another 21 days.
No, but we could possibly cover that on Geek if something comes out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, next week. Yeah, we Geek Actually. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. If we find out anything between now and then, hopefully before Geek Actually, we'll cover something. Mm. I'm sure that we'll have some new ads and stuff coming out for
or
it,
some,
could be fun.
Or even some live footage of...
Of events,
we'll
see what we can. We'll see what we can dig up.
Something up.
If we can't dig it up for Geek on Saturday, we will definitely have it on Wednesday. We will have some information about the launch of Apple
and all the fuck ups that come with it.
Yeah, let's see what goes. Let's see what goes wrong with this launch.
So there you go. I did it. Yeah. Again, broke that.
It's only one.
I'm getting better. I'm down to one.
You're down to one. The show's not over yet. Josh, I know you love it. I know you love it so much that we have to bring up the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider. And here is a picture of the Large Hadron Collider for our
chat
room.
I think that is a fantastic picture.
I just think that is an awesome... That is a Large Hadron Collider in action. I just think it is fantastic.
I have... Like, what I love is that that's technology so advanced, I have no idea of what it's doing right now.
And in fact, the reason why I bring it up is not a doom and gloom story this time. It's not some psychopath with a sandwich board trying to shut it down. This week... The Large Hadron Collider actually powered up to its most powerful level yet. It's not up to its top power yet. And I'd like to report, we're all still here.
If you haven't realized, you woke up this morning and everything was normal.
We're all still here, but I thought we should bring it up now that they've actually done this massive test or this massive run. It's not even a test anymore. I thought maybe it was time we actually talked a little bit about what the Large Hadron Collider actually is. Because we sit there, we go on about it, the God particle and this, but what is this device? What is causing all this grief? First of all, let's talk a little bit about what it actually did this week. This week, the Large Hadron Collider unleashed the unprecedented bursts of energy on the third attempt as beams of protons thrust. This is straight from Sydney Morning Herald, by the way. Thrust around the 27-kilometer accelerator. This thing is 27 kilometers of pipeline.
Wow.
Collided at close to the speed of light. And according to CERN scientist Paolo Cattapano, this is physics in the making. The beginning of a new era. We have collisions at 7, and I'm going to massacre this, 7 tera-electron volts. And I don't even know what that means, and it sounds good. Right? Or 7 TeVs, as he would say. CERN Director General Rolf Heuer could barely contain his excitement and said it is a fantastic moment for science. Basically, on the third attempt, they triggered collisions among the 20 billion protons in the Large Hadron Collider, creating a powerful but microscopic burst of energy that mimic conditions close to the Big Bang that created the universe. Which is why it's freaking people out, right? What they're looking for is what's called the Higgs boson. It is the God particle. They believe that it's a speculated upon particle that nobody ever knows actually exists or not, but they're trying to find it. Because they believe that the Higgs boson is like the stem cell of particles. They believe that this is the cell, the particle that started it all, right? And they're trying...
What happens when we mimic that?
I don't know if we want to mimic it or if we just want to discover it at this point. We just want to prove it exists. And if we can prove it exists...
Well,
man, that's going to really
universe,
throw the Vatican into a tiz.
Like, I mean,
Shane's got something on that. What is it, Shane?
So if somebody fell into this, would they turn into the Hulk or Magneto?
Look, I mean, okay, so we may be about to start some sort of comic book superhero, but before we get to that, it's so hard. Like, I mean, when you get science this advanced, it's really hard to kind of objectively talk about it, because anybody normal, I understand why you would freak out about this, because me, as a medium level, I would like to believe anyway, a medium level intelligent person, when I see something like this, I'm of course, there is a part of me that goes, wow, that's amazing, I'm surprised we can even do that, that's a huge leap in our thing, but... what happens when we do this? Like, I mean, with my little bit of knowledge, when they say this is what started the Big Bang, there's a part of me that kind of sits there and goes,
could we start the Big Bang?
Well, no, it's like, so last time this thing happened, it kind of exploded outwards and created a universe, apparently. So we're going to create that. Or find it. And if we're going to find it, what does that mean,
find
it?
What worries me is that we just want to see it. We want to know it exists. But what worries me is that once we see it, humans just love to tinker with it, you know? That's what worries me, is that they're going to go, oh, look, there it is. We proved it exists. Now, what can we do with it?
So they're going to create an energy source so vast
and
superior.
All I can think is Project Genesis from Star Trek 2.
Yeah.
Is all I can think. All right, so he said, according to James Gillies, the CERN spokesman, he said, we are within a billionth of a second of the Big Bang. That's how close they are.
What but like now we're not even talking about finding it. Now they're saying we're in a millionth of a second.
Well, they have to recreate the conditions of the Big Bang in this Large Hadron Collider. That's what it's for, to try and find that particle.
So again, I mean, me as a normal person says, you're going to create in that machine the situation that the Big Bang happened in. What? What?
I like the fact that let's just hit the chat room for a second here, because in the chat room we've got... Furball is saying maybe we've already been shifted into an alternate reality. And Furball would also like to know how many zeros Terra Electronovolts are.
I love his new comment. And how are they going to control this? How?
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the tech. Because quite frankly, I don't understand particle physics, but it just sounds so cool.
Every time we talk about this, I get scatter and scatter.
All right, let's talk about the tech, though.
I'm going to go join the Christians.
Bang, ow, my headphones. All right, so you're going to go join the Christians. All right, very nice for you.
I'm going to go join the Christians with the picket signs. I'm scared of this one.
All right, so according to this article from Reuters, it says, let's look at the facts. The facts are... though built to study the smallest known building blocks of all things known as particles, the Large Hadron Collider is the largest, most complex machine ever made. It has a circumference of 27 kilometers, or 17 miles, and lies 100 meters, or 333 feet, under the ground, straddling the French and Swiss territory. So it's actually on the border. At full power... trillions of protons will race around the Large Hadron Collider accelerator ring. Hang on.
That one.
That one. Yeah. Around the accelerator ring. 11,245 times a second, traveling at 99.99% the speed of light. Wow.
That's fast.
It is capable of engineering 600 million collisions every second.
Again?
Are we starting to feel nervous yet? It says, when two beams of protons collide, don't cross the beams, man. If we learn anything from Ghostbusters,
don't cross the beams.
They will generate temperatures more than 100,000 times hotter than the heart of the sun. concentrated within a minuscule space. Meanwhile, the cooling system that circulates superfluid helium around the Large Hadron Collider's accelerator ring keeps the machine at minus 271.3 degrees Celsius. That's awfully cold. We are tampering with the laws of nature here, people.
We have officially gotten to the point where we are literally creating now.
Oh, what am I doing?
We are literally creating things that are far beyond our control. Like, we used to look at movies and laugh at the people that were doing this and be like, that's so silly. And here we are creating the most scary device I've ever...
Psydog has said, I'm sure there are some scientists getting some stiffies about this worldwide. It's true. You can sit there. You can imagine they turn that thing on and they're sitting there going... mm. Ooh, baby.
Listen to that baby hum. They're like...
it's like their V8 car or something. Then it says here, it says to collect data of up to 600 million proton collisions per second, physicists and scientists have built devices to measure the passage of time of a particle to a few billionths of a second. The trigger system also registers the location of particles to millionths of a meter. All I can think is, if we got all this technology, why can't we make an internet censorship filter that works?
Or even better than that, why can't we cure cancer?
Exactly.
Jesus.
Last statistic, and this is the one that I really liked. It says, the data recorded by the Large Hadron Collider's big experiments will fill around 100,000 dual-layer DVDs each year. Tens of thousands of computers around the world have been harnessed in a computing network called, and if we weren't scared before, the grid. That will hold the information. And all I can think is, Skynet, anyone?
Yeah, it also sounds like Tron as well.
Yes.
Oh, good Lord.
End of line.
Yeah. Oh, this is horrifying. This is by the second, like, how did we miss all these connections? Like, oh, no. Dude, I
Furball said, and now the word collision is enough to give me pause. It's just this thing. We're smashing particles together at the speed of light, 330 feet under the ground. Really? Do we want to be doing this?
Dude, have we actually found out why we're trying to find this particle?
Like, scientists are obsessed with finding out what started it all. Mm. Because that's always been, let's face it, in the world of science versus religion, the age-old argument that always comes down, that always shuts the scientists up, is always that one argument, which is, sure, your evolution can prove this, and your this can prove that, and blah, 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 but what started it all?
Well, as a fairness, and I may have said this before, a fairness to Christians, there's actually no guarantee that, you know, whatever cosmic force created us didn't use the Big Bang to do it. I've never understood why.
Well, I also look at it and sit there and go, you know what? It could have been a one-off event, too.
Yeah.
You know? Furball has been... No, it's not Furball. Popshot has basically said it's Black Mesa. Which is a Half-Life 2 reference for those out there.
Half-Life 1 reference, actually, Dave.
They may
mention it, but Black Mesa was the place you were in. That's true. But more importantly, the event he's talking about was the Resonance Cascade, which basically...
is the Large Hadron Collider.
It basically did something really fast and then caused, you know, a collision of two dimensions and, you know, thousands of evil creatures to run around the world and eventually enslave it.
And all I think of at this point is red electroids from the Planet 9, from the 8th dimension in Buckaroo Banzai, where he passaged through time and brought them all back with him. So there you go. There's just too many variables here.
It's just, I have to say that I will literally find those scientists just so that I can say, I told you so, if we end up being invaded by aliens from another dimension.
I don't think they'll be around because they're at ground zero. Yeah.
That's true. No, they'll be enslaved first.
They'll be enslaved first.
They'll also decide to make a movie out of it as well. In the beginning, there was.
I want to know why there hasn't been... I think Shane's onto something. I want to know why there hasn't been a superhero yet that has come from the Large Hadron Collider.
That's all I can think about at the moment.
No, because it won't happen until that
Black
moment.
Hole, man.
Because if it was going to happen like that, it's going to happen at the moment of its like most extreme. It's going to happen when everything goes wrong. That's the way these superheroes are made. There'll be that scientist that's standing for no apparent reason at the exact spot in the middle having coffee or something, and all of a sudden all the juice from this thing will shoot up through him and, we'll create the world's first superhero. I don't think it's going to be like the comic books, though.
No, I don't either.
Either that, or it will happen like something in a comic book, and he will just become a red mess.
I think it's more likely that if the worst-case scenario is that a lot of the people who are against the Large Hadron Collider believe that when they smash these particles together at the final top speed, which they haven't achieved yet, they will actually open a black hole. That's the fear. Mm. And if they open a black hole, then the Earth will get sucked in on itself.
Wait, which scientists are these opposing scientists? Because please tell me these aren't the scientists that are doing it.
No, these are the opposing. These are the radicals who oppose the whole Large Hadron Collider.
Oh, yeah, we talked about this ages ago.
Yeah. So these are people who actually, the reason why they actually oppose it is because they think that we shouldn't be messing with nature these things that shouldn't be messed with, basically, and they may have a point, but they basically think that the crashing of particles won't find a God particle. They think they'll open a black hole.
Well, it's interesting, though. Like, I mean, and we've been on the story far too long, but just...
But it's fun!
But just one quick point is, I think of something of this magnitude, if it was really as scary as that it's talking about, you would really hope you have governments that know about this sort of a thing. And those governments have scientists on their panel to go, dude, this, should we be worried? Obviously, it can't be that dangerous because, I mean, like, worldwide uproar if we knew what it was actually doing. Like, I mean, surely, right?
Yeah, but I'm sure...
Am I being naive here?
I'm sure that's what they said to Oppenheimer, too, when he detonated the first nuclear bomb. Surely this can't be that dangerous.
Weren't we at war or something at that stage? The circumstances were slightly different.
It's like, I just look at it and go, sometimes I wonder, because I'm all for science, and you know me, I'm all for science and everything, but sometimes I do worry that scientists do things because they can rather than they should.
Well, yeah, that that famous line from Jurassic Park 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that line.
And, you know,
scientists
and
are so busy.
There's also the other line from Jurassic Park 1, which is from Malcolm, where he basically says, nature finds a way.
Yeah.
And you sit there and go, if this is not meant to be found, if this is not something we're meant to be screwing with, quite frankly, then nature will find a way to stop us. You know?
God only hopes that's the case.
I don't think God's got anything to do with this. All right, last story, and then we've got to get out of here. This is really, really quick. We're just going to throw this one out there and just say that a British public health expert...
I'm not even commenting on this one. It's that stupid.
A British public health expert has blamed Facebook for a resurgence of the sexually transmitted disease syphilis.
Of course.
Oh, for God's sake.
Technology is so easy to blame, isn't it?
I'm sorry. I go on Facebook all the time. I don't have syphilis. You know, I don't think Facebook itself
is to blame. Let's do a room check. Dave, you no syphilis?
No syphilis, no.
I don't have syphilis. Shane, do you have syphilis? No.
Chat room. No. You guys go on Facebook? Any syphilis over there?
Yeah, we got any in the chat room? Apparently, Psyduck does.
Says, so that's where I got that from.
And apparently, Laura does too. And Popshot. Okay, well, apparently.
All right, well, maybe he's gone to something. Basically, he came out, Professor Peter Kelly, Director of Public Health in Teesside. His argument, his evidence, so to speak, as it should be, is social networking sites are making it easier for people to meet up for casual sex. Really? That's your evidence? That's like.
So, meeting up causes casual sex. This doesn't work with my Facebook.
He did go on to say, if this solidifies his argument at all, he went on to say, I don't get the names of people affected, just figures. And I saw that several of the people had met sexual partners through these sites.
Right. Yeah, okay.
I saw that several of these people had met people through these sites. Okay. Now, let's just counter that by saying that an Australian study basically has said, get real. An Australian study, to quote, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, Solishwarker, a research fellow at University, let's just say University of Sydney's STI Research Centre, basically said it's allowing people to meet more frequently. Now, that doesn't actually directly mean that it's going to increase the rate of syphilis, but it does mean that there are more chances for people to meet and have sex. At the moment, it seems really far-fetched to link them, Facebook and syphilis, together without looking at the actual behavior of the people involved. Wow. She's saying we should do science and shit.
I just love the bit where it's, of course, the connection of people having sex more regularly, not the amount of people that aren't wearing condoms during sex.
That's true. She actually does go on to say it. She says you need to not use a condom to spread these infections, so it boils down to the basic message that it's not getting across, which means that we should be promoting more condom usage.
As opposed to don't use Facebook.
Yeah. So it's a ridiculous, ridiculous story. But once again,
that is a lull and a half. I mean,
maybe you can get it from playing Mafia Wars or Farmville or something.
Oh God! I mean, what if you have a question? Those things are the destruction of all things good in life. So
I mean, you do have a question coming on, like I need more wood to fill my barn.
I'm just gonna say at this point, no comment.
Yes, because Dave's all over stuff like that. Dave, do we have an actual date that they're going to hit full power for the collider?
No, they're actually saying that experiments go on for the next 18 months.
Oh, okay. So we've got some time.
We've got some time before we all
we've got some time.
Get sucked
cool.
into a black hole.
Because, you know, it would be really sad to end, like, this week. Because, like, we didn't even really have a good show.
I want to
like,
see the iPad.
What?
I want to see an iPad. Before
exactly. I mean, like, we've got the iPad coming. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of new technology over the next year that would be good. Like, I mean, I'm just not ready to go yet.
No,
I need at least a year longer.
Yeah, I think they're saying that the experiments will run over the next 18 months, and then hopefully they're going to get it, well, they say, hopefully they're going to get it up to full power. Oh, dear. Okay. Well, we'll wait and see. Look, I actually don't think it's going to, look, just to put people's minds at rest, I don't think it's going to open a black hole. I'm not even sure, though, that they're going to find the Higgs boson either. I think it's interesting science. They're finding out lots of data about the way particles move around the universe. That's wonderful. I just think that it's an awful lot of money to be spending on experiments.
I'm still going for this money could have been used for my cure.
Well, and that's right. I look at this thing is.
I want my pills from Transmetropolitan. I want my anti-cancer pills. I'm just waiting for my anti-cancer pill.
We're talking about a device that costs billions and billions of dollars, and all I can think is that billions and billions of dollars could have been put to... I think we need to solve all of our problems first before we start looking to make new ones, is kind of how I look at it. But that's just me. Anyway, we're going to get ourselves out of here because we're actually slightly over the hour. I was hoping we'd be on an hour directly, but at one point I thought we were going to come in short. But then we started talking about...
Hydroncolitis. And superheroes.
Let's just say that if you agree or disagree, or you have a topic that you would like us to discuss, or you have anything...
More information on my hydroncolitis. I am obsessed with this thing now. I want to know how it works, and I want to know how it's going to create
a black hole. If we have any particle physicists out there... Please get in touch with us.
Damn right.
All right. You can send your email to geektech@geekactually.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at Sydney number 02-8011-3167. We're not going to go through all of the housekeeping this week because we're running a little bit over, but we will say that we do want to throw out some Cheerios to some of our friends because they've mentioned us over this last week, which is, of course, Real Junkies at WeekendRonan.com. And you can find them on iTunes. They're a movie podcast and the other podcasts I do recommend. And they've changed their name, and it's the most stupid thing in the world. I actually sent them a voicemail today. The MovieFanHouse.com is now, or MovieFanHouse.com, they're now calling their podcast the Movie Fancast to differentiate themselves from the website. I don't think it works. And mind you, these are the people who ridiculed me when I was on their show about saying, Geek Actually Tech, what kind of name is that?
Cast. Yeah, no, I'm not feeling it, dude.
No, I'm not feeling that one. Anyway, I like Movie Fan House. I thought that worked a lot better. Anyway, moviefanhouse.com, or you can find them on iTunes. They're also a lot of fun. Now, we hassle them about their name, but that's because we like the boys a lot, and they're a good podcast. we also have our other shows to talk about. Josh? Tell us about one of our podcasts.
Are you going to do the thing where the thing slides across? Because if so, I've got to get it on the right side.
No, just tell us.
All right, well, platforms, obviously, if you guys haven't been there, that's our games podcast. This is where we talk about shooting things and everything that's evil, like R18 ratings and so on and so forth. You see, now you got Shane with that one. I'm glad. So please come check us out. This week will be Just Cause 2. Possibly possibly our last week of a decent review for a little while because we're starting to dry up for some game reviews. But so make sure you check out that one. This game has been eating up a lot of my time and is really, really good fun. And then on top of that, Shane is doing something strange on the side. On top of that, we have special guests coming up in two shows, which will be a very, very big show. And it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. We will regale you with tales about that. And don't forget to come in on Friday nights on Xbox Live and play games with us.
Yes. Check out the Platforms fan page at Platforms Live, or just search for Platforms in Facebook, because you can get all the times for that gaming night.
Yep.
Okay. Also, don't forget our main show, which comes out every Saturday at 12 p.m. or Sunday on iTunes, which, of course, is the Geek Actually podcast. Our basic weekend geek. It's a very casual, laid-back kind of podcast where we just rattle our way through some news, and then we review a film. And usually it's kind of fun. We have another newbie coming on this week. Josh and I are on the show as usual, but we have Celine...
Roberts.
Celine
that
Roberts.
That took a while.
We have to think about that. Sorry, Celine. Celine Roberts is coming on the show. She is proof positive that there are female geeks out there.
Yes.
Because we've had so many arguments about this. Everybody's like, no, there's no such thing as a female geek. Yes, there is.
And we will show you
that. And we will show you one. And she's coming on, of course, to help us review Clash of the Titans, which is coming out this week. From all accounts, I think it's going to be a fun review because it's not getting good pre-press at this point. Oh, yes. So do join us for Geek Actually this week. It should be a lot of fun. With all that being said, I think we're done. I don't think we have any more. I think that's all the housekeeping we're going to do today. Where can we find out more about you guys on the internet?
Again, on the internet. You always kill my speeches. On the internet, you can find...
That's my job.
You can find me at the platforms. Facebook would be the best place to go. Just go to Facebook and look for platforms and you'll find us.
And you can find me, just type in my name on Facebook.
Shane Robert Gregory, is that the name?
Yeah.
Boy, that's so formal sounding. Shane Robert Gregory.
Yeah, and if there's a scientist out there that knows a bit more information about the LHC, if it can bring Hellboy back from the dead.
I love this thing, man. I'm obsessed with this. This is sci-fi coming to reality.
Just before we get out of here tonight, I just want to just hit this chat room for a second because they've gone berserk in here. And I just want to know, first of all, Psydog, the movie failed cast, that's a bit rough. Come on. pro tip, don't say it might be our last good review to encourage people to come back. Did you say it was the last good review?
I did actually think about that. I didn't say the last good review. I just said the last review, as in, like, there's nothing coming out until the end of next month.
Oh,
we have a retro show planned, which is what I was saying at the time, which will fill the gap between those two times, which is going to be epic. There will be the largest cast of people that's ever been on a platform show.
Oh, dear, that's scary.
No, it's getting cooler, so it's okay.
That's true. Actually, I got to say, just for the people who listen to our shows regularly,
this is awesome.
It's lovely in here. No fan running. It's lovely. The temperature has dropped. Hopefully, we should have a very nice winter set of shows. Okay, we're going to get out of here. Remember, we're the geeks, so you don't have to be. We try and cover your tech every week. And everybody have a great Easter.
Yes,
because it's Easter weekend coming up.
Happy Easter, and make sure you eat a lot of chocolate. But not too much.
Chocolate Egg Day.
Yeah.
Chocolate Egg Day. All right, and we'll talk to you all next week.